Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Good to be back in studio with David Niles. Juan on the buttons, Jim by the door. By the time, if you're listening to this on the podcast, by the time you're listening to this, we're out camping.
We are.
We'll be out camping for the annual Catholic Man Show camp out at Clear Creek Abbey.
By this time, I'm probably already swimming in my tent.
Just based off
of inside joke for anybody who's been at the camp out before, you know that there's a tradition.
Yes.
About the camp out and that my tent floods.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically.
We're bringing pails to pail water in the event we don't get rain, just to keep the tradition Just to keep it going.
Yeah. My brother-in-law, Father Sean O'Brien, today he called me. He's like, "Hey, can I crash in your tent just for one night?" I was like, "Yeah. Definitely, but you should know something.
The thing about my tent,
I bring a cot, and that's for elevation. Okay,
I am super pumped about the Catholic.
It's less than Adam, less than a week away.
I know, a little anxiety there, but that's okay.
Are we ready?
No, we're not. But that's okay. We have a couple more days.
Okay.
So, guess what else I am? No sin gang. Went to confession today.
Oh, sweet.
Luke went, my whole family went, and I loved in confession today, the priest at the end, he goes, "Listen, I don't want to embarrass the priest." I don't think he could say yes or no if he said this or not, but he said, "Listen, you got to pray the rosary daily. You got to start reading the Bible every single day. Things are about to heat up, and we need you on the battlefield."
Totally, dude.
And like, I walked out of confession just like,
"And then the winged hussars arrived."
Just like, you know, bowed up, like ready to go.
"We're excited. Sick neck."
Yeah. Like, I was grabbing my rosary in my pocket, like, "Oh, let's do this."
These nunchucks or rosary.
I mean, obviously, as men, we're supposed to be praying the rosary every day. You know, you're supposed to be reading scripture every single day. But like, it was just nice. It was so great to hear as I was walking out of confession, "Hey, we need you on the battlefield."
Yeah.
So up your game. Anyway,
Are you going to do
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
There's some priests that listen to the show, so that's some good advice if you want to take it.
Yeah, I like being talked to like a man when I'm in confession. Yeah, you know what I mean? Either like, "Hey, you need to, you know, cut that silly crap out."
Yeah.
Or, you know, like with whatever dumb thing of, you know, whatever I'm confessing.
Well, sin is dumb.
I mean, especially if it's like a priest who knows me and knows like, "Hey, you know, you've said this before to
right.
me, okay? That's enough.
This is a rinse and repeat situation here."
Right, like, that is enough.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, "You're right!
Get together!
I'm going to burn all the candy in my house when I get home."
Hey, let's try this Redbreast 15-year.
The 15-year.
Yes. Okay. So
we've had Redbreast on the show.
We have had the 12,
but it's been it was like a long time ago.
It was
a long time ago.
I think it was Wednesday. Yeah,
so way back.
Yeah. Speaking of a long time ago, we also had a Mark Gillespie on our show a long time ago, who hosts the Whiskey Cast.
How's that guy podcast. Doing?
I think he's doing okay. I don't know. I haven't reached out to him in a while, but he is very knowledgeable when it comes to whiskey. And so I'm going to read the notes from his website, whiskeycast.com, for the Redbreast 15.
I will allow it.
Okay. It's kind of short, so I liked the...
Sure.
The nose on this pure pot still Irish whiskey is nutty with light spices, oak, and red apples. And I remember that even the 12, we said it had like this fruit, like red apple smell to it, so... The taste is smooth with roasted almonds, figs, blackberries, oak, and dark chocolate notes. The finish has a hint of vanilla with hazelnut and charred oak notes. Outstanding is what he said. He scores it at a 93, so he's his own point.
Wow.
He has his own point system out of 100.
93 sounds high, though.
93, yeah. It's out of 1,000. No. It's out of 100. And so he rates it at a 93, which is a very, very solid score.
El Juan.
It's 46.7% ABV. Irish pot still from Ireland. Here you go, Jimbo. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. And to St. Patrick.
Yes.
Definitely get the red apples. Almost instant, like the first thing that I caught were the red apples. I don't
get the Honey Delicious, maybe?
I don't get the
I can't. Nice. I'm between Fuji and Honey Delicious.
Nice. I don't get the nuttiness to it. I don't get any kind of
not on the nose.
No.
So this is about a $100 bottle.
Okay.
So this is, I don't actually remember.
It's hard for me to spend $100 on an Irish whiskey. I'm just here to tell you.
Yeah.
It's hard for me because there's a lot of scotches that I know for sure that I will like at $100.
You know what though? This is true about a lot of most whiskey in general, but there are very few Irish whiskeys I don't like. They're just all, like, they're all just a mouth pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they go down easy and they taste good. And usually they're cheap too. So don't quote me on the $100. I don't remember exactly how much it was. Roughly. I think it was about $100.
Yeah. I do get a little bit of the sweetness of blackberries, a little bitterness of the dark chocolate.
Mm, that is tasty.
And it has a nice long finish.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I like it. What do you think, Jimbo? You like it?
Yeah.
Jim likes it. Jim's notes are, it is good.
Jim and I, we compare notes sometimes.
And
oh, really? You went with good there. I said delicious.
Yeah.
That tastes well.
That was pretty good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yummy.
Would you pay $100 for it?
No.
No.
I wouldn't.
I think it's a very good whiskey.
Super good.
Yeah.
But not part of me saying no is because of my own preference. In whiskey, I like smoky, peaty, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in your face. Mm-hmm. And this is really, it's not smoky or peaty. It's got a lot of flavor to it, but it's just not my go-to, you know what I mean? So that influences a lot my response when I say no, I wouldn't pay $100
for it. I will tell you, it is, out of the Irish whiskeys that I can recall offhand, yeah. In my Rolodex, if you will, this one would be a top one for me.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's better than the Terraconnell, it's better than Powers, it's better than Tula Mordu.
Powers is Powers though, you know, you're only, that's like $30.
Yeah, they have
I think
a higher end that's 60.
Like for the price for what you get, that's one of the best ratios.
The Conor McGregor Irish whiskey is pretty solid too for how cheap it is.
It has a good flavor, but it just the finish is so short.
Well, it'd be interesting to try it again because remember
right,
the first bottling
was
younger than what it is now.
You're right. We should go out and buy some just to hold, and then we could do a vertical on it someday.
That'd be nice. That'd be a good idea.
Because you don't do that with a lot of whiskey because they're already matured. You know, like you could still, you could go buy the Redbreast 12-year and the Redbreast 15,
mm-hmm.
but it's not quite the same as watching as year to year as a whiskey matures. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. They don't usually release it.
Right. No, I think it's good. I
super good. If
I like
if
how
you're
it has
an Irish guy, you should. It's worth having.
I also like how it's not lemony. You know, a lot of Irish whiskeys are
lemon.
Are very lemon heavy.
Yeah,
this has that crisp apple taste with the dark bitter chocolate on the palate. I think I think it's very.
Yeah, there is chocolate on there.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder why I like it.
You like dark chocolate.
Yeah.
So, by the way, also, if you have not had a chance to listen to our episode that we did with Father Sean Donovan a year or two ago on the Winged Hussars.
And then the Winged Hussars arrived!
Go back and listen to it. It makes a lot of sense, especially in this time of year.
And then you'll know why I'm going to keep doing that throughout the episode.
You are?
Yeah, I have a shirt on. I have my Winged Hussar shirt on.
I know, I just didn't think you would do that.
Oh, I'm going to.
Okay.
It's happening, people! It's happening.
All right, well... Great.
Just get ready.
Yeah. So also, let me tell you this. I started a new book. What are you reading right now?
I am reading The Discernment of Spirits by Father Timothy Gallagher.
Okay.
And loving it. I think it's just right now what I need to be reading. I'm receiving a lot of consolation from reading it. It's like in the discernment of spirits worlds, I don't know. I'm at the beginning of the book, but I think this is a good sign. You know, I'll let you know when I'm done.
I have some news for you, but yeah. I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let you figure that out yourself.
So what did you start? What are you reading?
Human Soul. And it, Father, oh my goodness, I just blanked on his name. He's going to make fun of me. Kelly Edwards, Father Kelly Edwards. I apologize, Father Kelly Edwards. He gave me the book.
Oh.
And he said he read it, and he was reading it, and each page he was almost like, this is very Thomistic. Adam would really like this. And he was moved to
give it
mail
to
me
you.
A copy. And
what a guy.
I just started it, but
what a guy.
It's going to be really good.
Is he coming to the camp out?
Yes, he is.
He is? Oh, good.
Yes, he signed up, so he will be there.
Mucho perfecto.
Yes. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. Man gear is what we do the second part of the show.
Yes.
We have the beverage. Now we'll go to the man gear. And then we're going to talk about the marital debt.
The marital debt.
With St. Thomas Aquinas, what he has to say on it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
This next segment brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker, catholicwoodworker.com.
Spiritual weapons built for battle. Jonathan makes heirloom quality crucifixes, rosaries, home altars, best out there.
Make sure to use promo code TCMS for 10% off all purchases. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer. We're drinking a little Red Breast. So I have a quick story to tell you.
Okay.
So Father Jim Cosgrove.
Is this a true story?
This is a true story.
That you made up?
No.
Or that actually happened?
I'm just relaying.
Okay.
Yeah. I was asking him something about like, you know, how do you know the difference? You know, if you're praying and like you feel like, oh, maybe God is like saying yes to this. Is that him saying yes? Or is that just because you want that to be what he says, you know?
I'm pretty sure God wants me to have a Lamborghini.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
Pretty sure that's what he's telling
Look,
me.
Because I have a desire for one.
Right.
You know?
And he hasn't killed me yet because I said, like, just go ahead and kill me if you don't want me to have one.
Right. And that's what I said.
Yeah. I get it.
Didn't happen.
Right.
So anyway, he's like, well, you should read this book, The Discernment of Spirits by Father Timothy Gallagher. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm reading. Pamela, Lady Pamela, mm-hmm. her ladyship was on a retreat at Clear Creek this last weekend, mm-hmm. And one of the priests gave what was apparently an incredible
yes,
talk.
Haley said that too. So like, Haley went to the,
yes,
the retreat.
Yes, Haley was there, right.
Lady Haley
and
said.
And she said that like half of the women
crying.
Were sobbing.
Yeah.
Like by the, and I was like, what would that be like? As you're, it's an intimate setting, you know, you're like just in a small room with, you know, like 8 or 9 women.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're giving a talk, like you realize half of them are crying. It's like, do I keep going or like, do you want me to stop? You know,
right.
And like, I'll tell you, I've never done that. Okay. I've never made anybody cry before. Anyway. So she was like,
what would it be like for guy, if it was like a guy's retreat and somebody was giving a talk and we looked around and half the men were crying.
That would be it's like, you better have recorded that talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's telling me about this talk and how great it was and how he was talking about, and this is on it's on Saturday, the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary,
mm-hmm.
About discernment of spirits. And she's like, oh, you know, she was like, and I was like thinking about you because you were reading the book. And so she's telling me this story, blah, 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 blah. About an hour later, I checked my email, and Father Jim Cosgrove, who told me to read the first book, forwarded me an email put out by Father Timothy Gallagher that said, on this, the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary, I'm proud to introduce my new book, The Discernment of Spirit for Married Couples. And it was like, oh my gosh, I guess I have to buy that. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think that's how it works.
Is this a sign?
What is it? Could it be a sign?
Lord, is this a sign?
So anyway, it was crazy.
Yeah.
You got to be careful dealing with that Father Cosgrove.
I know, he's okay, awesome.
Because like weird stuff will start to happen to you.
He's like becoming so, like, one of my best friends
in a cool way
that lives far away. Like,
yeah, yeah, like we bonded.
I know. I can't wait. He's coming to the camp out.
I know.
Pumped.
Yes, he's gonna be at the camp out.
Yes.
Okay. So man gear for today: credit cards. Okay, we're talking about the marital debt later, so we figured we'd talk about regular debt first, so we don't get confused.
Natural debt?
Because I'm not kidding. I Googled, I was like doing research for this, and I Googled something about marital debt, and for pages and pages of results, all it was talking about like how to, if you get divorced, who owns what debt from the marriage. You know, you know, and so like
signs of the time.
That was marital debt. If you Google marital debt, all you do is get stuff about who, when you get divorced, how does the debt get divided? That's not what marital debt really originally refers to. So let's talk about a little bit about credit cards or just debt in general.
The great thing is you don't have to worry about it for another 30 days. So just
buy it.
Yeah, just.
That's the beauty of credit cards.
You don't even have to pay it
and
yet.
You can just cancel them.
Yeah, it's great.
They'll just let you do that.
Right. Totally working the system. I got a free blanket the other day for signing up for one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just cut that baby right up.
Yeah.
After I maxed it out.
Yeah, naturally.
So I am a financial advisor, but I'm not giving anybody specifically advice. You know, I'm not, you cannot take, I don't know how to give you the proper legal disclosure, okay? But I'm not giving you advice. Do not take anything I say as advice on whatever your situation is, okay?
Second mortgages are the way to go.
Yeah, and
reverse
you should have
mortgages.
One. Yes, of course.
Yes.
So credit cards are a good tool. They're a good thing, depending on if you have the ability to use them the right way. And that's a big thing, because you know you can get benefits. Like if you're buying stuff online, using a credit card is safer. Because if someone gets your debit, if you're using a debit card, for instance, that's not good because someone could drain
your account.
And if they get your credit card information, you just tell the credit card people like, yeah, I didn't buy that stuff. And they just say, okay. It's removing fraudulent charges from a credit card is as easy as a phone call. Removing fraudulent charges from a debit card is often a very long and
nightmare,
painful process. Okay. So, that's one thing, one reason why you might want to have credit cards. Also, you can get points, you know, you can get cash back or just whatever. There's all kinds of credit cards out there that might give you other benefits for using them that fit your situation, your lifestyle. Okay. So those are good things. However, if you lack the discipline to use them well, those benefits like the 1% or 2% cash back is wiped out in 1 month of bad decisions.
Dude, I just had a phenomenal idea. Hear me out. Ready?
Okay.
Catholic Man Show credit card called Secundum Creditum. Okay?
Okay. Cycle of credit?
Yes. We make a bunch of money.
Right? Okay, I'm liking it so far.
Right. And all they do is sign up. And then we make, you know, 1% of each transaction.
And they just give us the money.
And they give us the money. Catholic Man Show credit card. Secundum.
Trademark. Trademark.
Creditum.
Trademark. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. That's great idea.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll look into it.
Jim, remind us.
Trademark.
Yeah.
And then the wing just soars around. No, but seriously. These are the principles of credit card usage. If you do not have the money, you can't buy it. Okay. Like if you're saying like, yeah, but I'm going to get paid on Tuesday, you need to cut up your credit cards. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like if you're using your credit cards to float your expenses until you get paid, this is a bad system. Okay. And I know like, It might work every now and then, and like you're still paying your bills, and you know, like no Italian mobster has showed up at your door, like coming to collect on something, you know. But that's a bad idea, okay? You don't buy it if you can't pay for it.
Right. The best thing to do is if you're using a credit card, you pay it off, you drain it back down to zero every single month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that way you get the benefits of whatever the credit card is.
Yeah. If you can't pay it off every month,
then you shouldn't be.
Then you can't use the credit card.
Right.
So like Dave Ramsey's become very popular. And one of his things
in the 1990s, Dave Ramsey became very popular.
Well,
it's
yeah, very,
it's funny that we say Dave Ramsey's become
but he
popular.
Has, he's like made a,
I know he's gotten bigger,
you know? Yeah. Like
I get it. I was just yeah. making fun of you.
And so one of his things is about getting rid of credit cards and using a cash system. And so that system is really good for people who haven't, don't have success or don't have a history of success.
There's
managing their credit cards.
There's a
well.
Virtue of prudence and temperance, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
In this aspect.
And so, you know, Dave Ramsey would say credit cards, you know, probably aren't good. And he's speaking to a specific audience. He knows who his niche market is. Okay. So, if
what baby step are you on?
Yeah, exactly. Like it. And so, if you are someone who hasn't had a lot of success with credit cards, in fact, if this last month you did not pay off all of your credit card debt, then you might be someone who shouldn't be using them. I'm not saying that that's the case for sure, because there's all kinds of situations.
You're giving advice.
No, no. But right now, we had like mortgage rates hit 2.5% this last week, all-time low. Very, very crazy. There are actually many analysts out there who forecast them going to zero. I say poppycock. It's ridiculous. They're never going to zero, okay? Like, with the banks just going to take all of the risk for you and just like, yeah, sure, we'll give you some money. I mean, yeah, sure, like, you're not a great credit. You know, like, you don't have stellar credit, okay? But we trust you.
Right.
We think you'll pay us back the nothing that you owe us, right? Like, that's stupid. It's like, there's some people who it's like, you are an academic, and only an academic could be that dumb. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you get so mm-hmm. narrow-focused, or you like you forget to take a step back.
I'm looking at you.
And just, like, look at the real world for
looking
a second.
At you, Hegel. Like, the philosophy. Like, yeah. you're... Man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So,
Hegel was terrible. I'm sorry.
Was he the deconstructionalist?
Yeah, and, like, he was, like, he would intentionally write to try to confuse somebody. Like, he didn't want people to understand what he was writing.
Yeah. It's like that's a
only philosophers that are anyway go ahead I'm sorry I derailed
it's like
us.
People like that why do we still talk about him, you know, like
I agree
why is
anyway. I agree with that
anyway. So like interest rates are really 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 low.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a good time to refinance, you know, if your interest rate is not really 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 low. Mm-hmm. And then you know what, interest rates might go lower, but that's okay, don't worry about that.
So as the husband, like why even worry about it?
Well, what do you mean? Like, why is that?
Like, why? Like,
well, it's because, you know, you're head of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's your job to provide. You're the provider. And this falls under the category of providing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you need to use prudence and figure out, you right. know.
Even if you're a stay-at-home dad, you are still the provider of your family. You're still the head of the household. And so what you've done is saying, okay, spouse, you're a doctor. Or you know, whatever it is you do, you make a lot more money. So me as the head of this house, I'm deciding to stay here so that you can do this because it's the best thing for our family, right? I mean, that's ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what's going on, okay? Mm-hmm. So just because you might not make the most money or whatever, it doesn't mean you're not head of the household. You are. That's your office. And you can't not be because you're the dad. You're the husband.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... Manage your stuff.
Ooh.
Get help. Budget. If you do not have a budget, you need a budget.
Manage your stuff.
Just manage your stuff.
That I'm going to take that out and we'll just use that as a line, like promo.
Yeah.
Just
that
manage
sums
your
it
stuff.
Up. Just manage it.
Yeah. Okay, so when we get back, we're going to talk about the marital debt according
marital
to St.
Debt.
Thomas Aquinas, correct?
Not credit card
debt. We're not
debt.
Saying it. St. Thomas Aquinas
that's
is going
right,
to say
and
it.
That's hopefully true.
We should tell. Never mind. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Drinking a little bit of Redbreast 15-year. Going to talk about the marital debt, what Thomas Aquinas says about it, and other people as well. But we're riffing off of,
yeah.
Should we say riff? Are we riffing off of Aquinas?
No, I think that would be fine. And I think we should also just maybe make a child advisory notice, you know, we are going to be talking about marital issues today. So I know that there are a lot of guys who like to listen with their sons, and just, you know, maybe listen first before you keep going with your son.
Because perhaps you want to be the one telling them about this.
Right, yeah, because we are going to be talking about marital stuff. And so, I mean, I don't know exactly how it's going to go. That's what I'm
We're not really sure what we're going to say yet.
Yeah, and so.
So the other day, okay, I got to, let me throw this out there. So we signed up for our email blasts now, our email newsletters, because we have somebody doing it for us now. Yeah. We have had enough patrons that have come on to where we can hire somebody to take over the email lists that we do. And we were talking,
which means that emails will actually be sent out now.
Right, because I only sent
out
one.
It's a big change.
Big change.
Here,
yeah. I was like sending out one every about 10 weeks, and now we're doing them weekly. So we were on the phone with the company, and they just start laughing, and we were just talking, and we were, what's going on? And they just were laughing, like, now we know you guys really don't prep a whole lot. Like, you sound exactly like you do
this
on your show.
Just like the show.
Yeah, and we were like, well, we do leave a lot of room for the Holy Spirit.
So much.
So, anyway, shout out to our patrons.
Because of our holiness.
Thank you so much for supporting us. It helped us. It's take off
thank you.
Things that we've had to do. Patreon.com/TheCatholicManShow.
Check it out.
Okay,
continue. We also have new beer glasses.
Yes, that we're bringing to the camp out.
Sweet.
And the wine.
We have. Oh man, I was just wondering, like,
dude. Actually, I better make sure.
I was just about to thinking, like, ooh, what about the wine? But I said, you know what? I better ask off air.
Yeah, better be prudent. And I'm over here. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We're hoping to have the wine.
Yes. Okay.
Continue. The winged hussars arrived. Or winged hussar wine.
Yes. Okay. I don't know how you would like to start this topic.
So the marital debt, something that maybe people, many people have not heard of. Or not aware of what it is, but it's an interesting thing. And St. Thomas, he's got maybe like 5 or 6 different articles on it here in the Summa. This is in the supplement to the Summa, so it's not from the second part of the second part, like almost everything else you ever hear quoted from the Summa is.
It's about the virtues, and
right? Yep. So this is from the supplement of the Summa. And interesting, may or may not have been written by Thomas himself.
It was compiled by his guy.
Right, yeah, because this is like on, the question is on things annexed to marriage. And that question specifically, they believe that, like, that right before that is where Thomas himself actually stopped writing. But his students compiled
his
this.
Scribes?
I don't know. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's in the Summa.
The Guiding Principles of the Conjugal Act.
Right, and they are pulling all of the stuff from his own work and his teachings. Right. So the marital debt is just that the husband and the wife owe, a husband has a right to his wife's body, and a wife has a right to her husband's body. And because at the marriage, at the wedding, part of your vows are the gift of, yes, I give actually my body to you, and you are giving your body to me. Mm-hmm. And so,
just like Christ gave his body to the church.
Yes, on the cross. Exactly. On the cross. Exactly. And so, remember when Dave Van Vickle was here, we were talking about, he was kind of mentioning how a wife could actually perform an exorcism on her husband. I don't know if we said it on the show, but we were talking about it off the air.
I remember off the air.
It was very confusing because, you know, wives don't have authority over their husbands, but they do. We looked into it and we found, well, they do have authority over their bodies. And since possession takes place in the body and not in the person, so it's not like your soul is possessed, it's just your body that is possessed.
I forgot about that. That's interesting.
A wife.
Isn't that interesting? That's weird. That's crazy.
So a wife could, in theory, perform. I mean, the rite of exorcism is a rite performed by a priest can only perform, like, the official rite of exorcism. But all the same, she has authority there, and so she could do something exorcism-like,
right?
Because she would be wielding legitimate authority over her husband's body. So there is a what is referred to as the marital debt, and it's just that, you know, she has given you her body, and so because of that, you owe yourself to her in a very physical way. And so what what St. Thomas says is that he kind of uses the example of like a slave and how a slave is bound by obligation of precept to pay his master the debt of his service. And he quotes Romans there. And so because therefore the husband and wife are mutually bound to the payment of the marriage debt. And so this is good news. I think a lot of husbands right now who like aren't familiar with this are maybe rejoicing, you know, but, where you find this more specifically in the vows is, when you promise that you will accept children lovingly from God. And so, you are actually required, the fact that you're married to,
be
open to life and to give, like your spouse the opportunity to bear children and to have offspring.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, let's say you're whatever, this is like your job, you travel or something, whatever, and you're gone all the time. I mean, just make up some weird scenario where it's just not feasible for you to ever have relations with each other, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, that would actually be a violation of the vows you took at the altar.
Right, because, you know, you're consummating the marriage whenever you do have conjugal relations.
Right.
That's the consummation.
Sex. Let's just say it. Sure. Not, yeah.
Yeah. When you have sex.
Right. So.
You're consummating it.
And it's like bringing it to its completion.
Right.
And when a marriage is consummated, that's when it becomes indissoluble. Because actually, if you go to the, you know, before the altar, you go through the wedding, but then a couple never consummates the marriage. It's not that they weren't married, but it is dissoluble. So it could be dissolved, and you could go and marry somebody else. Today we would call that a Josephite marriage. So anyway, first I just want to say that the marriage debt exists. I also want to give a shout out to Carlo Broussard, who was here last weekend, because he did a lot of work that like showed the way, like,
for us.
We could totally make an episode out of this. In fact, we almost did this episode with him,
right? But
last week,
but we did Purgatory, which was a phenomenal episode. Yeah. I thought. Anyway, keep going.
Okay, and so St. Thomas, he discusses a lot of really funny questions in this particular question. You know, some of these different articles are really funny, and we're not going to go into some of them. But it's a question, I think it's question 64 in the supplement, if you want to go read it yourself. It's
pretty interesting.
There are some funny ones, okay? But anyway, so one of them is, he talks about how whether or not the wife has to specifically, like explicitly ask for the marriage debt to be paid in order for the husband to be required to pay it. Because he does say the husband must, if like the husband doesn't ask, then the wife is not required to pay.
That's why, you got to ask. Debt. You're not going to get it if you don't ask. You can't close the deal if you don't ask.
But he says, conversely, the wife does not have to ask. Like the husband should know.
No, he knows by certain signs.
Yes. Okay.
Like, that to me is like, okay, so you're telling me I have to know these signs, and sometimes that means I have to have like this mind reading apparatus to be able to know what she's feeling, what, you know, this is ridiculous, St. Thomas. I feel like that you're asking quite a lot here.
Yeah, so whether husband is bound to pay the debt even when his wife does not ask for it. I answer that. The debt may be demanded in two ways. First, explicitly, as when they ask one another by words, and secondly, implicitly, when namely the husband knows by certain signs that the wife would wish him to pay the debt, but is silent through shame. And so even though she does not ask for the debt explicitly in words, the husband is bound to pay it whenever his wife shows signs of wishing him to do so. So I think there's a lot of husbands out there like, hey, honey.
Is that a sign? You put the remote down. Does that mean?
That could be a sign.
Yeah.
Is that a sign?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Are you
so okay? So here's the question that I have for you. So what would be so you're paying the debt. What is something that's not a reasonable expectation? So let's say you ask and the wife says says no.
Right.
What is something reasonable for that no to exist?
Okay. So Thomas specifically addresses this question.
Because that's what people are going to want to know. Like, you know, what is the no?
Right. Okay. And so he goes into that, you know, you have a obligation to pay the debt to your spouse, but you have a primary obligation to your own well-being. Okay. And so if paying the debt to your spouse would cause a detriment to your own well-being, then you do not have to pay the debt. And if your spouse knows that and still demands it of you anyway, then it's a sin for your spouse.
Ooh.
It doesn't say mortal sin, but
actually, you know what? I did an examination of conscience from like an old, like you know, pre 1955 examination of conscience.
Yeah.
And one of the things on there was, it, you know, it has a one if you're single or if you're married. One of them was if you said no to the marital debt unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that, and because it was saying it's a sin.
Yeah. Well, it is. It is. If you know, if you just say like I'm tired, you know, okay, I want to. Yeah, we gotta
discuss. You opened up a can, right, there,
but how? That's a common, super, sure, super common. So I think we should talk about it.
Okay.
On the other side of the break, we'll talk about does I'm tired, does it count?
Okay. Very interesting. Well, all right. So we'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by Select International Tours. We are so thankful for them for supporting our show. Dave, 2020 has been a little crazy, obviously, but they are now rebooking and adding new pilgrimages every single week at Select International Tours.
That's right. And the big one is that the Oberammergau Passion Play was supposed to take place in 2020. It's supposed to take place this year, mm-hmm, or it could have been last year. I don't really recall. The big, what's important is that it has been rebooked for 2022. So if this is something that's on your bucket list, they only do it once every 10 years. Now is the time to book it if you want to go.
Go to selectinternationaltours.com.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer. We're talking about the marital debt, and we're drinking a little Redbreast.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so we've talked.
As we talk about the marital debt.
Yes. So we, the question we had.
Tired. We're talking about is about being tired. Tired. Okay. Right. Because, like all good moral answers, it depends.
What is your intent?
And what are the circumstances? Okay. Because, like, let's say you're.
What's the final cause?
Yeah, God. He's always the final cause. That's the easiest one. The efficient cause. That's the one that gets complicated sometimes, I think. And all the other causes also. Yeah. Also all of them. So let's say, like, you know, you're in the woods. You know, it's 200 or 300 years ago. And the husband is going to have to get up, like, real early and chop wood or something. And
hunt.
And, like,
let's say
hunt or whatever. It's like something he needs his strength to provide for the family, like, and one of those things might be like getting to bed early.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a reason when you say like I'm tired, a legitimate reason, because he has his office. You know, he has obligations on him that are more than just himself, and his own well being is involved in that too. Like if there's no firewood, mm-hmm, they're all gonna die.
Yes,
I mean just imagine some hypothetical scenario.
Sure.
However, if, like, you're just tired, St. Thomas Aquinas would say that the marital debt needs to be paid. And that...
Because there's sacrifices that need to be made?
And, well,
on your part?
Because you owe.
Yeah.
I mean, you have... It's a real debt.
So, I mean, that goes back to, you know... So, it's a love. It's a love that you have for your spouse, uh-huh, right? And so, I think it's also funny because he talks about, like, what's your motive? What's the motive of the conjugal act on your part? Is it, yeah, lust?
Mm-hmm.
Because he talks about that, like, in the pursuit of the conjugal act, if your motive is lust, and he goes and he specifies both a single person and a married couple. And in the married couple, he says, if your motive is lust, then it's treated as a venial sin. If you're a single person, it's treated as a mortal sin.
Right, right.
But ultimately, the reason why I think that's important is we go back to husband and wife. It's giving yourself to the other person.
Right. So here's what he says right here. The wife has no power.
I've already summed it up.
Well, you didn't do a very good job. So I'm going to have to read this. So. Okay. The wife has no power over her husband's body, except as is consistent with the welfare of his person, as stated above. Wherefore, if she go beyond this in her demands, it is not a request for the debt, but an unjust exaction. And for this reason, the husband is not bound to satisfy her. Although it's like, it's probably going to. I mean, let's be realistic. So the whole I'm tired thing, like that. Also, I think, like, as a loving husband, if your wife says she's tired, do not be do not demand the debt be paid. You know right. what I mean? Like, we should, like, as
don't be a tyrant.
A real lover doesn't, because the sexual act at its nature is you are making a gift of yourself. And it's like, oh, you're tired? No, you have to. I'm trying to give you a gift. You know, ungrateful yeah. wife. You know, it's like, yeah, you're a real generous giver.
Right.
You know, so like, if she's tired and you're like demanding the debt be paid, you know, there's also some injustice on your own part here. You know, or you're kind of missing the whole like beauty of the act. That, you know, you would make a gift of yourself to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not how Christ serves his church. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's, I think, an important thing, to be said. But, St. Thomas, he also covers some other funny questions, like whether it is forbidden to demand the debt on holy days. Okay. And he kind of says yes.
Really?
Yeah. So he kind of...
I haven't read that.
He kind of said... He says, although the marriage act is void of sin, nevertheless, since it oppresses the reason, like a person's reason on account of the carnal pleasure, it renders man unfit for spiritual things. Therefore, on those days when one ought especially to give one's time to spiritual things, it is not lawful to ask for the debt.
Wow.
Okay. So that's what he says. You know, like, he also was not a married man. Important to just kind of mention that.
Wow.
You know, this is...
But you know what?
This
is one of those things... sound reasoning.
Where, I mean, it's... I don't think it is, actually. I don't think that the sexual act renders, like, is actually a detriment to the man.
To reason?
To reason. Now, I have given this a lot of thought, not because of this, but I've thought about this in the past, that the sexual... pursuit of sexual goods... to a married man is significant and causes him less intellectual rigor than it does the single man. The single man is pursuing it all the time. He has to take a lot of his time and attention into, you know, like how he's going to achieve those quote, you know, these mm-hmm. the ends the next time, you know, where he has to like, he's worried, you know, like, oh, you know, he's having to date or having to like use a lot of his own natural resources, mental resources.
So it's important to be virtuous.
Okay, right. Whereas the married man doesn't have to do that.
Still important to be virtuous, though.
Yes. Well, of course.
Yeah.
Good point, Adam. Hey, Adam, good point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's like, you shouldn't have sex in front of everybody. Like St. Thomas exactly. had to make sure he yeah, said
exactly.
that.
So, but anyway, for the married man, because it doesn't cost him like these mental... He doesn't have to spend mental resources on the pursuit of achieving sex. Then I don't think that it actually affects his reasoning as much because he's not having to use up. Because you know, like every like just from a natural level, you only have like so much ability to like actually concentrate in any day. You know, it's like they say you have like 30 minutes to an hour of actual like. Hyper focus ability in any one day, and beyond that you're just, you know, you're going to be fried. You just can't keep it up, and obviously every person's going to be a little different, but so I don't think that it actually does detriment to the reasoning abilities, the reasoning capabilities of man. Also, I would argue, Thomas, that the very first commandment in the Bible that God gives to man, not the first commandment at all, but the first one that God gives to man, is go be fruitful and multiply. Okay, so this is like the almost like what we were made for, okay? And so it doesn't make sense to me that it would be a detriment to divine worship in any way. And in fact, you know, this is one of those things. Now we can kind of look at this from through the lens of theology of the body, and we can see that the marital embrace is not. I feel like when you read Thomas and just people back then, it's like there was still kind of like a fear of accepting carnal pleasure. You know, like the fact that sex is pleasurable means that we should kind of be a little bit suspicious of it. You know, like even though he does say that the pleasure due to as a result of sex is a natural good, you know, and that there's nothing sinful about it. He's very careful to say, like, if you're pursuing sex for the pleasure alone, then it is a sin. You know, and he, in fact, he even says, if you are demanding the debt be paid of your wife and you're pursuing that not from her as a wife, but simply as a woman, that like, oh...
Dude, you didn't listen to me earlier when because I've said that already.
Oh, is this what you said? Yeah. I was actually not listening to you.
I can tell.
Okay, so...
Because you followed up and it was like, yeah, that's what I was saying.
Well, I was doing it better. I think I'm still doing it better.
Fair enough.
I mean, I didn't hear what you said, but...
but I'm just going off of history and like, I'm just saying I think I did
it's better. Right. Yep. So anyway...
Fair enough. You know what? I'm not mad about it.
So, in many ways... And in fact, this is true. The sex done well, a holy sex, you know, between a married couple, is itself an avenue of grace. Mm-hmm. In fact, it could be it is possible for the marriage act, the marital act, to be an act that actually could grant the forgiveness of sins.
Or like a sanctifying grace almost?
Love, you know, like when you say, like, love covers a multitude of sins. When done well, you know, this is your vocation. This is like the highest thing.
Is that what JP2 was saying in the Theology of the Body?
I don't know if he actually says it. I think Christopher West kind of takes some of his principles and applies them to that to get to that reasoning.
Fair enough.
But, you know, when he does it, it seems like he makes a good argument anyway for it. You know, if you're doing it well, if you're truly seeking to make a gift of yourself to the other... that it could be, it certainly becomes a sacramental, something by which, an avenue by which we would receive grace. Okay, so if that's the case, then far from being a detriment to divine worship, it becomes in part a type of divine worship.
Which is why, you know, it's beautiful to be praying before bed, you know, before you go to bed with your wife, because you're bringing in the divine to the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when people say like, oh, it just doesn't get me in the mood. Well, it's like, listen, maybe you need to think a little bit more about what you're actually doing if that's not getting, you know, if that's like turning you off.
Right. And in fact, it is my own belief that the reason why sex is so pleasurable is because it is in many ways a foretaste of heaven. The pleasure that is a result of sex, it was not something that was added on at the fall. Okay, so in fact, sex before the fall may have been far more pleasurable. And so we wouldn't have needed like a natural incentive, you know, because some people might say, oh, well, God had to build in a way to make sure the species would
We know it's pleasurable because also chastity is good. Chastity is a good thing. And you don't sacrifice something that is not a good.
Well, sure. But my point is that just it would have been pleasurable beforehand as well. So the pleasure itself was meant to be a foretaste of something. This intimate union, the intimate union that we will experience in heaven, not with our bodies per se, but with our persons. You know, we have this communion in heaven. And I think that's what sex is supposed to be foreshadowing. Anyway, there's a marital debt to be paid. And it needs to be paid. That's all I got to say.
We're gonna go off on that. Cheers to Jesus.